Let's read together Genesis chapter 29, verses 1 through 14. In these verses, we have the arrival of Jacob in Padan Aram. This was the area where Rebekah, his mother, had come from. Here we see Jacob meeting Rachel, his future wife. Genesis chapter 9, beginning at verse 1. So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. And out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Then he said, "Look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together, and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." Now while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Let's consider a few background notes for this section, first of all. After Jacob's dream in Genesis chapter 28, he continued on his journey to the north and then to the east. His destination was Haran, also known as Padan Aram. The area today is about where Turkey, Syria, and Iraq come together, the top of the Fertile Crescent. Kurdish people live there today. Haran would be about 500 miles from Beersheba, where Jacob started his journey. Here, Jacob would be safe from Esau's wrath, and here Jacob would find a wife. Remember, Isaac had instructed Jacob to find himself a wife in this area where Rebekah had come from. I'm reading Genesis chapter 28, verses 1 and 2. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." Well, Jacob arrived in the area, and he just happened to stop by a well where there were some shepherd boys who just happened to know Laban, Jacob's uncle. And then Rachel, a shepherdess, just happened to arrive with Laban's sheep. And she just happened to be a nice-looking single woman. "Wow," thought Jacob, "everything's going great. God is making good on those promises that he made to me back in the dream at Bethel." Seriously speaking now, God was making good on his promises. These events were not just happening. God was working behind the scenes to accomplish his purposes. You know, this account reminds us of the account in Genesis chapter 24, where Abraham's servant came to this same area to find a wife for Isaac. We saw divine providence at work there. We see divine providence at work here as well. Now, just before we go to our doctrinal or teaching points from this section, a few more notes might be helpful. In verse 7, Jacob tries to order the other shepherds, probably shepherd boys, to water their sheep and move on. Why? Well, you see, Jacob knows that Rachel is coming, and he wants to meet and talk with her alone. When Rachel arrives, Jacob single-handedly removed the stone from the well's mouth, showing that Jacob was no weakling, right? And then he watered all of Rachel's sheep, certainly to make a good impression on this beautiful single woman. And then he went over and kissed Rachel, and he began to weep. Verse 11. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Now let me ask you married ladies here this morning a question. If your husband had kissed you on your first date and then started crying, would you have married him? Well, we assume that Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative before he kissed her and started crying. And really, that's why he is crying. He's crying for joy here. He's a long way from home, and he's happy to be with family. In any case, Rachel runs to tell her father, Laban. And he comes out and welcomes Jacob, as we see there in verses 13 and 14. Then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Well, that brings us then to our two doctrinal points for this first section of Genesis 29. Doctrinal point number one, the guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual immaturity. Once again, the guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual immaturity. Now, we certainly see that truth taught here in the life of Jacob. Jacob is a believer, but at this point in his life, he is not a spiritually mature believer. In fact, at this point in his life, Jacob is a selfish and deceitful and cunning and crafty believer. Remember, he had just deceived his father, Isaac, in order to steal the blessing from his brother Esau. And the vow he made before God in chapter 28 is somewhat of a self-centered bargain with God. Look back here at chapter 28, verses 20 and 21. Then Jacob made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God." You notice how kind of selfish that vow is? Jacob is certainly no spiritual giant at this point in his life. But here's the point. In spite of all his shortcomings and spiritual immaturity, God was working for good in Jacob's life. Here in this chapter, we see God's guidance working behind the scenes so that Jacob is protected and provided for. Jacob will yet be the man of faith God intends him to be. The guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual immaturity. That was true in Jacob's life. It's true in our lives as well. You know, just this summer, Margie and I heard about a young man who had been in our church youth group over 20 years ago. He was a believer, but after high school, he went away from the Lord and did his own thing. His interests were all self-centered. He had very little time for God. But in spite of his spiritual immaturity, God was working behind the scenes. And he guided him to the right wife. And he guided him in his travels so that his eyes were opened once again to the things of God. To make a long story short, he and his wife are now joyfully serving the Lord full-time as missionaries in Eastern Europe. The guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual immaturity. Doctrinal point number two. The guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual ignorance. The guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual ignorance. I think we see that lesson taught in this passage as well. At this stage of the game, Jacob was not only spiritually immature, he was spiritually ignorant for the most part. He was not aware that through all of these mundane events, God was accomplishing his purposes of bringing about a nation through which the Redeemer for all mankind would come. At this point in Jacob's life, as we saw from his vow there in chapter 28, Jacob was only interested in his own safety and his own needs. He was spiritually ignorant of all that God was doing through him and would do through him. Well, you know, the same is true in our lives. We're spiritually ignorant, for the most part, of all the good God wants to do for us and through us. Illustration. You know, more than 25 years ago now, I made a job change. We had to move from central New Jersey to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Well, we looked for a house in the Pittsburgh area to buy, but we couldn't find a house. Nothing seemed to work out. Well, finally, almost in desperation and, shall we say, a little frustration on our part, we decided to rent a small house temporarily. Well, it was through that rented house near the local high school that we began to realize that God was calling us into a ministry with high school teenagers. And that led to leaving secular employment and serving the Lord full time. At that time, we were spiritually ignorant of all that God was doing for us through the events of those days. We continue to be amazed at the way God works behind the scenes without our knowing it to accomplish his purposes. And the same is true in your life as well. The guidance of God is working for good in spite of spiritual ignorance. I'm sure many of you could share stories from your own life along this line. Well, what about practical application from this section? Do we really believe Romans 8:28? Do we really believe Romans 8:28? You know, there's no way we can study this chapter in Jacob's life and not be reminded of Romans 8:28. I'm reading Romans 8:28. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Notice, it does not say that all things are good, but all things work together for good in the believer's life. All things are not good. Jacob deceiving his father was not good. Jacob's selfishness was not good. Jacob's spiritual immaturity was not good. And as we will see, Jacob marrying four wives was not good. But you see what the scripture is saying? God can take all things, including our shortcomings and sin, and work them together to accomplish his good plans for us. And those plans certainly include a lot of discipline to correct us, as we'll see in Jacob's life. But he can take all things and work them together for good. Do we really believe Romans 8:28? Now you may say, well, I believe it for Jacob's life, but I have a hard time believing it for my own life. Listen, if you're a believer here this morning, Romans 8:28 is addressed to you. All things work together for good to those who love the Lord. All your ups and downs, all your pleasures and hurts, yes, even all your shortcomings and sins, which are not condoned in any way and must be disciplined. Still, God can take all of these things and work them together for your ultimate good and blessing. That is what the Bible teaches. Do you believe it? Do we really believe Romans 8:28?